morning and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
Well, obviously, you know, from our perspective, we stand by the case. We think the case is airtight, rock solid, so it really should we should win, but there's no way to know. It's going to have to be decided by the bench.
A Rwandan opposition figure seeks re-establishment of their right to challenge incumbent President Paul Kagame in the coming July election.
We have opportunities in salmon or trout fishing. We've already started exporting some of that to the U.S. As we speak, but there is plenty of capacity to grow and farm the salmon for this particular market here in the U.S.
Minister for Trade of Lesotho says the kingdom remains open and ready for business with American investors.
So this time, the government is preparing itself to offer the optimum of conditions enabling the diaspora, those willing to participate in this consultation, offering them the best conditions.
And Cameroon's top envoy to the U.S. says the administration in Yaoundé wants citizens in the diaspora to vote in next year's general election. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. A lawyer for Victoire Ingabire, a Rwandan opposition figure and government critic, says in a petition to the East African Court of Justice that her rights were violated. Attorney Sheila Palin petitioned the court seeking the re-establishment of the opposition figure's civic rights to compete in the coming general election in July. She also is seeking the removal of restrictions that prevent her from leaving Rwanda. Her remarks come after a Rwandan High Court declined to restore Ingabire's civil right in March. It followed her previous convictions for terrorism and genocide denial. The ruling effectively prevents her from competing in the July presidential vote. Ingabire condemned the ruling, which led her to petition at the East African Court of Justice to seek redress. For more about the petition at the East African Court, I reach Ingabire's attorney, Sheila Palin, in Yerevan, Armenia.
So Victoria Ingabire, was arrested and sentenced to a long prison term, which she has since been presidentially pardoned for. In the absence of being able to be rehabilitated, she cannot run for elections. There are certain restrictions that continue on her, and she is entitled to be rehabilitated. But the Rwandan court system keeps refusing to rehabilitate her. And so we've taken the case to the East African Court of Justice to seek the restoration of her civic rights, which includes the right to run in the elections, which are coming up in July.
Realistically, what are the prospects of success with this case at the East Africa Court of Justice?
Well, obviously, you know, from our perspective, we stand by the case. We think the case is airtight, rock solid, so it really should we should win. But there's no way to know. It's going to have to be decided by the bench when it reaches them. But there have been clear violations of the East African Community Treaty, especially insofar as it requires Rwanda to abide by the fundamental principles of democracy, rule of law, and human rights. And I mean, it's a lengthy, long list of violations here against Ms. Ingabire. So we are confident that we have a good chance, if not a very good chance, of success.
Well, some critics of the court say that usually governments, although they are signatories of the establishment of the court, routinely ignore the rulings of the court. Is this going to be different?
Well, that's, of course, it's hard to tell. This is a consistent problem with these kinds of courts where they don't have a robust enforcement mechanism, and that's across the board. I mean, it's not limited to the East African Court of Justice. But these rulings are binding, and so really it's incumbent upon the state to abide by the ruling. Now, whether or not Rwanda would choose to, or not choose, would actually abide by its obligations to abide by a ruling of that nature, you know, I can't speculate. We've seen, for example, in the case of the African Court of Human and People's Rights, which did find that Rwanda had violated Musinga Mbere's rights, it took a good year before the presidential pardon came through, and I do believe that that ruling had an important part to play in eventually getting her pardoned. So
when does this hearing begin on this case at the East Africa Court of Justice, and will this be in time before the elections, because the elections are just in July?
We have asked for urgent measures because we don't have a hearing date or anything like that scheduled. We've just filed on April 30th, and we have requested urgent measures to be issued in time. And it's not just the July elections. It's actually sooner than that. This month, by the end of this month, she will have to register her candidacy. And so we're waiting for a response.
What's next? As the court considers this, what's next for Ms. Ngabire?
She's a fighter, you know. She's doing everything that she can. And part of this grueling process is to be patient. And she is doing everything that she can to bring true democracy to Rwanda. So what more can we do than what we've already done? She speaks, and she speaks her mind, and we hope that, you know, the Rwandan state is going to really allow for a healthy democratic process in the upcoming elections.
So the core petition is for the court to pretty much tell Rwanda to allow Ms. Ngabire to compete in the coming elections, correct?
Essentially, yes. And there's the added request that she be allowed to travel, because she hasn't been allowed to leave Rwanda since her pardon, and even before, obviously, because she was in jail. So she hasn't seen her family in a very long time, and this is also in violation of her basic rights to movement and to see her family. And so there's also that element.
Sheila Palin is a lawyer for Victoire Ngabire, a Rwandan opposition figure and government critic. She spoke with me from Yerevan, Armenia. The Deputy Prime Minister of Lesotho, Ntombeng Majara, says the U.S. remains a strong partner to the Southern African Kingdom. Majara, who is the first female Deputy Prime Minister of Lesotho and also the first female Chief Justice, says there's a strong potential for partnerships between Maseru and Washington aimed at advancing women's economic empowerment through technology and innovation. Her comments came during the just-ended U.S.-Africa Business Summit in Dallas, Texas, organized by the Corporate Council on Africa. This, as Lesotho marks its eligibility for Compact 2 through Millennium Challenge Corporation, or MCC. I reached Deputy Prime Minister Ntombeng Majara via a video link. Some of the topics discussed include the potential for partnerships between Lesotho and the U.S. aimed at advancing women's economic empowerment through technology and innovation. Here is the conclusion of the conversation. So, Madam Deputy Prime Minister Majara, what two major challenges are facing people of Lesotho in leveraging trade agreement to support women entrepreneurs? And what do you think the strategies or policies are to surmount these challenges?
The challenges are the ones I've just mentioned: lack of opportunities, lack of access to information, lack of access to technology, because ICT is the way to go these days. So if women can't access modern technology, it becomes doubly difficult for them, because the whole world has gone digital. It becomes doubly difficult if they don't have the legislation, information on what arrangements and agreements are out there, so that they can leverage that knowledge to assist them start up their businesses or grow them, and to also enter into international markets. Also, as a strategy, because we are a member to the we conform to the Convention 190 of the International Labour Organization, which safeguards their rights and to eradicate violence and harassment, because there's also that at the workplace as well as in the private sector, because it's a very competitive industry. So we have tried to, like I said, legislate toward protecting rights as well as matters like domestic and sexual harassment at the workplace. So these are some of the barriers we're trying to break through legislatives and other measures.
Now, in December 2022, I had an interview with the Prime Minister of Lesotho, your boss, about unemployment and challenges the textile industries in Lesotho are facing, which is AGOA support. What is the current situation? Though I learned that the U.S. Congress has tabled a bill for AGOA extension.
Actually, we have had a big loss in the textile industries, which is another industry that was employing many of our communities, especially after the COVID-19, because most of the companies closed down and many people lost their jobs, not just those who were employed in the textile industries, but also businesses like, you know, hair salons, because of the COVID-19 protocols which we had to observe. So most businesses had to close down. But we are hoping that with the likely extension of the AGOA, we will be able to revitalize the textile industry, because it is also one of the biggest employers in the country, amongst other things. So AGOA will help us, because we are getting demands for clothing and textile. But with the factories closed, with no one running those factories, what remains for us, if the AGOA is extended, is to train our own people, especially those who have been employed in the factories, to actually be the managers and owners of those factories as well, whilst we are still to engage foreign direct investors to come again and reinvest in our textile industries. But our AGOA is a much needed injection into the textile industry again.
As the first female Chief Justice of the Kingdom of Lesotho and the first female Deputy Prime Minister in the same kingdom, what would be your message to women in Lesotho who look up to you and those in Africa and beyond about what you have achieved so far in helping move the Kingdom of Lesotho forward?
My message to other women, not just in Lesotho, but across the world, is for women to know that anything is possible. If we can make it and actually gun for leadership positions, because it is only us as women who fully understands some of the barriers to us to gain all these opportunities or to get entry into trade, to get access to information, access to basically everything that improves our livelihoods. So it is very important for women not to shy away from taking up these big leadership positions. It is not easy. It is very challenging. It is overwhelming, but it is doable. And we can do a lot for other women, but we have to be properly placed in leadership positions in order for us to bring a positive change to our girl children, to other women.
Ntomeng Majara is Deputy Prime Minister of Lesotho. She spoke with me from Dallas, Texas. Also, the Minister for Trade of Lesotho says the Southern African Kingdom remains open and ready for business with American investors. Moheti Shidili says investors in Lesotho also have access to markets in countries within the Southern African region, including South Africa and Botswana. His remarks came at the just-ended three-day U.S.-Africa Business Summit in Dallas, Texas, organized by the Corporate Council on Africa. The meeting, officials say, it provided a major platform for deepening U.S.-Africa business ties across key sectors, including agribusiness, energy, health, infrastructure, trade facilitation, ICT and finance. Lesotho Trade Minister Mokgethi Shidile talks to me about the attractive opportunities available to American investors.
In fact, I know that any American company that can choose to come to Lesotho will take advantage of the South African market and the rest of the region, that is Botswana, Namibia, Swaziland. These are Southern African Customs Union member states. The region has a deficit, a power deficit, and there is an opportunity for American companies that can locate in Lesotho, generate renewable power, maybe wind, maybe water. We've got plenty of water. As a matter of fact, we sell water to South Africa. We have about 300 days of sunshine every year. So it is a very good opportunity as well to do renewable on the solar side. We have opportunities in salmon or trout fishing. We've already started exporting some of that to the U.S. As we speak, but there is plenty of capacity to produce, to grow and farm this salmon for this particular market here in the U.S. We have quite a lot of things, I think, that we can share with or interest American partners to come and produce from Lesotho.
Can this summit help rescue Africa and particularly Lesotho in assisting production and boosting exports?
It's a good platform for networking with business people, with influencers, with members of the U.S. administration, and so on. But on its own, it's a component. It's a component of a jigsaw that needs to be assembled that can benefit the youth in my country. So on its own, no, it cannot. But with others, I think that is it's something that we can say we'll get very far with.
Lesotho for years has depended on AGOA through your textile industry, and I'm sure I hear that you await its extension. Is there any plan to diversify structures, and how critical it is to be extended, the AGOA to be extended?
Oh yeah, that the last part, very, very, very critical for us. It makes a big difference in terms of how much competitiveness we can gain from lending things here in the U.S. without having to pay the necessary duties. That it gives us a competitive edge. I remember where I was helping one company to try and negotiate a deal here, and very small numbers that matters. Like he had to compete and remove like 17 cents on the price that he was offering the buyer here, because the buyer could get that one cheaper elsewhere. And he was saying, no, if you don't do this 17 cents, I'm going to go to another country. So those small margins, they make a real difference for us as a nation. Definitely we do need AGOA. We have to have it renewed as quickly as possible. 2015 was not a very good example, because it was renewed at a very last minute before it lapses, and it had a very serious disturbing consequences on the orders that people had, because they were no longer sure of what prices to quote and all that. So we would like to avoid that from happening. We are talking to Prosper Africa to see what else can we do. Hopefully we'll even take part in what they call the Fancy Food Show, which is coming up this coming June or July.
What is your take on the U.S.-Africa Business Summit based on what you want to achieve as a country?
I'm happy. I'm happy with how it's been structured, how it's been organized, and the level of interactions that we are having. We have had very, very good bilateral meetings here of the quality bilateral meetings from people that have been invited to come.
Moheti Shidile is Lesotho's trade minister. He spoke with me from Dallas, Texas.
Actor Denzel Washington once said, "A mother is a son's first true love. A son is a mother's last true love." This week on Our Voices, we explore that unique bond, what it means to mother and son, and how a mother's love could help her son bring out the best of him. Join the conversation on Wednesday at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.
Newly released market research shows that 74% of South Africa's youth think the country is heading in the wrong direction. It shows they are less optimistic about the country's future. They are also displeased with efforts by the government to create jobs for them. The African Youth Survey, which explored the current state of South Africa, was carried out by the Ichikowitz Family Foundation. Respondents also say their biggest concern is corruption, which rose from 64% in a previous survey in 2022 to 85% in this year's polling. For more information about the study, I reach Ivor Ichikowitz. He is an industrialist, philanthropist, and chairman of the foundation.
This year, in advance of the main survey's release, which will happen in towards the end of June, beginning of July, we decided to do a specific enhanced version of the survey looking only at South Africa. And we did this because 30 years into South Africa's democratic process, we wanted to get a proper understanding of what the current generation of youth think about the country, think about its future, and to understand their hopes and aspirations as they go into what is going to be a very important election for the country. And that is how this survey came about.
I'm seeing that 74% of the respondents say that South Africa is going the wrong direction, with only 22% thinking it's in the right direction. Talk to me about this figure.
First of all, the bulk of the youth surveyed believe the country is going in fundamentally the wrong direction. They believe that there are extremely high levels of corruption that are properly getting in the way of their ability to live the lives that they want to live. This corruption is getting in the way of their ability to find jobs, getting in the way of service delivery, getting in the way of their ability to be educated, and they've pretty much had enough, and they're saying it very, very vocally. They're also saying that they are, for the first time yet, finding their voices. You know, in previous editions of the survey, it's always concerned me that the South African youth do not believe that their voice has value. They do not believe that their vote has value, or did not believe that their vote had value, and they didn't really believe in the democratic process. What we're seeing in this edition is something quite different.
What about their personal ambitions vis-a-vis what the direction of the country is?
Well, a lot of the people that were surveyed are saying that they have high ambitions to be educated, to secure well-paying jobs, and to be able to live the kind of lifestyle that they perceive that their compatriots elsewhere in the world are living. They're also saying that they are prepared to immigrate if their country, if their government is not able to create an enabling environment that gives them the ability to do that. So we have an ambitious youth that is really quite fed up with the legacy of the past, that believes that the country has a future and that they intend to play a role in creating that future, and they're going to use their voice in order to achieve that. And I think that it shows that there is a high level of ambition. And as you know, it's ambition that drives growth and development.
What about the issue of the fight against corruption? Are they content, or are they pleased with policies and measures being implemented to combat corruption? Because some of them express deep concerns about the issues of corruption in South Africa.
Absolutely not. I think one of the things that has come out of this survey, that every single person that is engaged with policy making as it relates to South Africa needs to pay attention to, is that the youth have identified corruption as being a major, major impediment to growth and development. They're obviously feeling this way because they are seeing corruption all around them in every aspect of their lives. Now, it must be remembered that this survey is conducted very scientifically. It takes a very carefully calculated sample across income groups, across demographics, across race, across religion, and it's therefore very, very representative. So we're not just talking to black South Africans or white South Africans or colored South Africans. We're talking right across the board. And what this statistic is showing us is that all young South Africans are seeing corruption as a major problem. Now, part of the challenge we have is that it's not completely clear exactly what they're experiencing, because it also must be remembered that corruption is being used as a political tool, or let's say allegations of corruption are being used as political tools by various opposition parties. And one of the things that the youth have also identified is that fake news is a massive problem in South Africa right now.
Ivo Ichikowitz is an industrialist, philanthropist, and chairman of the Ichikowitz Family Foundation. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. Cameroon's top envoy to the U.S. says the administration in Yaoundé has implemented measures to ensure citizens in the diaspora are able to vote in next year's general election. Ambassador Henry Etunde Esomba tells VOA officials of the Electoral Commission, or ELECOM, are expected to be in Washington as part of the effort to enable transparency and efficiency for Cameroonians living overseas to vote in a credible poll. It comes as the Electoral Commission plans to open the registration process for prospective voters as it compiles a voter list to be used for the polls. Ambassador Esomba also encouraged citizens across the U.S. to register to vote in next year's elections. In a wide-ranging interview, Ambassador Esomba tells me that the government is committed to bringing peace to the restive parts of the country.
The forthcoming election in 2025 are not the first opportunity. I have had the opportunity 6 years ago to host a polling station here in the
Washington.
In Washington, mm-hmm. And the reality is that the preparedness were not that effective due to technical reasons, and so this time the government has. Is preparing itself to offer the optimum of conditions enabling the diaspora, those willing to participate to this consultation, offering them the best conditions.
Ambassador Esombe, let's go back home. For those who are in areas where there is some form of conflict,
mm-hmm.
What chances do they have that they would be involved in choosing who the next president of Cameroon will be?
I think to that end, including for those regions, regions in turmoil situation, the government is putting in place disposition to give a chance, including to those areas, to participate to the consultation. You know, the question marks remains: how safe this place, this area, would be to permit such, and I think the experience of the past has demonstrated, because we hold recently, when I say recently, it was a year and a half ago, legislative and senatorials. Mm-hmm. So even the area you are referring to being to being conflict, they are not in conflict. They are subject to harassment by gangs, because today there is no such thing as I would say legitimate claims for independence or what. What is going on today, on especially in the English-speaking area, gangs are trying to hijack the functioning and any process that could be that could be launched in view of securing those areas.
I wanted to ask you what the government policy is to ensure peace return to that area, and that these gangs who you say try to hijack the peace and cause trouble, you know, to be fought or to be neutralized, to ensure that residents in those areas have peace, because it's the, as you said, it's the government's responsibility mandated by the Constitution to ensure that these Cameroonians' lives and property are protected.
But I think the process, when you look at the process from the initial situation, when all this started, it was corporatist claims from lawyers, teachers. All the issues that were on the table have been addressed. We leave the negotiation table open to anyone who would like to join, and in view of consolidating what we have started doing. So this is that has been the attitude of the government. The second point is that you know, if you want to secure an area that has been in conflict for years, that is subject to assault, you use at the same time the security and coupled with dialogue. That has been the two leverage the government have used, and it has been quite successful.
Henry Etundi Esomba is Cameroon's ambassador to the U.S. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C. The Madaraka Festival returns to the United States for its 10th year anniversary celebration. The festival brings a vibrant celebration of African music, culture, and community, touring 13 states in the U.S., including the states of Maryland and New York. The tour kicks off in Dallas, Texas on May 25th and ends in Seattle, Washington on June 18th. The festival founder Simon Javan Okello and Cameroonian-American music star Naomi Achu, who is a part of the tour, sat down with VOA's David Vandy to talk about their tour.
Madaraka Festival is the fastest growing East African music festival in the world. In 2014 is when it started. This is the 10-year anniversary. Last year we were in 6 cities, and this year we're in 13 cities. Our headliner this year is Nyashinski from Kenya, and Eddie Kenzo from Uganda, Naomi Achu from Cameroon, Savara, who is from Kenya and is also part of Sauti Sol, the legendary Sauti Sol group. We also have Dynamic from South Sudan and a number of surprise special guests.
And now, Naomi Achi, when you take the stage, everybody screams, Naomi, give it! Come on, do something for us! So tell me, what is it like being a part of this Madaraka Festival this year?
I'm very honored. I performed at Madaraka Festival the year before last when it was an annual festival happening in Seattle. Now, Simon is taking it all over America, and I'm very excited to be with the East Africans and to share West African music in this stage and let the world know that we are one.
You say it started 10 years ago. This is the 10th anniversary.
That's correct.
So what are the goals? What do you aim to achieve with this festival, taking it across the world?
This music festival is the primary East African touring music festival. If you look at the history of East African music, there is no single artist who has actually toured 5 cities by themselves. And, you know, the thing is, for us to build a sustainable touring circuit for East Africa, we have to build something like Madaraka Festival and build partnerships with Live Nation and other big players in the music industry. It's something that is really needed.
So now that you're beginning to bring in West Africa, do you hope to collaborate with a lot of other stars from different parts of the continent?
Well, we have been. From the very beginning of the Madaraka Festival, like in 2022, when Naomi performed at Madaraka Festival in Seattle, Dibanj was the headliner and is from Nigeria. We are just more focused on ensuring that we center East African artists, but we also work with even Caribbean artists, you know, Zimbabwean artists. So we are very diverse, but we are very loud about creating an opportunity for the headliner to be an East African artist.
And Naomi, you are going to be like representative from the West.
Yes.
So tell me, what are you going to take to this festival that will stand out, that will make the difference?
I'm taking a variety of music. I'm taking Makossa, Afrobeats, I'm a piano. I'm letting the world know that West Africa is known for many different genres other than one specific genre that we hear on the radio today. I'm taking everything that West Africa is and sharing it with the East.
Simon Javan Okello and Cameroon American music star Naomi Achu spoke with viewers David Vandy from here in Washington. This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from African Collection. But first, now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Friday, the 10th of May, may well be remembered as the day the General Assembly challenged the Security Council for its decision recently not to submit a recommendation for the full membership of Palestine. Of course, all members of the Assembly were aware that vote in the Council was very, very strong. 12 were in favor, 2 abstained, and only 1 United States used its veto to block the admission of Palestine to the United Nations. So the draft resolution, which was submitted to the Assembly by the delegation of Algeria and the Security Council, representing all the Arab states, still stipulates in that draft resolution that the Security Council should reconsider its position on the question of Palestine, because in the judgment of the General Assembly, Palestine has fulfilled all the conditions for admission under Article 4. The members also said in the compromise to the United States that while the width, the Security of the Council's response to the request for review, they would maintain Palestine as an observer in the United Nations. But in the meantime, they went on to strengthen the role of Palestine in the United Nations. They broadened the scope of Palestine's participation in the affairs of the United Nations. In the assembly, Palestine will move from the side sitting to mingle with all the full members of the General Assembly. Furthermore, the power and privilege of the Palestinian delegation would be increased. They will be able to participate not only on matters pertaining to Palestine and the Middle East, but also to other items. In their participation, they will be able to offer amendments, to make statements. In a sense, they will be able to participate as full members, except they could not vote. But this is also not that substantial, because under the United Nations law and practice, the General Assembly can withhold the votes of full members in the General Assembly if they do not fulfill their financial responsibility under Article 19. Now, the General Assembly, before voting, had to listen to some advising of the vote before the vote. And in this instance, the representative of Israel understood the import of the draft resolution, that it would enhance the participation of Palestine in the debates. And he was outraged. He said that the United Nations member states were violating the Charter of the United Nations. But the members as a whole then went on to indicate that they do not agree with the analysis of the Israeli representative. And when the vote was taken in a requirement for two-thirds majority, 143 member states approved the resolution. Only 9 member states, including Israel and United States, voted against. And 25 member states abstained. Diplomats at the UN said this was a gesture to the United States, but does not mean that they do not support full membership for Palestine. Now, as in the past, we are already hearing in the media that the vote to enhance the role of Palestine is merely symbolic. This mantra has been repeated over and over again since October, meaning that the General Assembly is merely like a toothless tiger, and it only can recommend, and that this is not, there's no obligation for member states. This is not correct. What the Secure General Assembly showed, that it had the right to question the Security Council, because the Council does not admit members. It is the General Assembly that admits member states. All the Security Council does is to recommend. And here the Assembly was saying, we do not agree with your judgment. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Such is it.
Yeah, I don't wanna hurt anymore. Moyo si mama when you calling my phone. Niki Tazama, oh no, I'm not alone. And I'm feeling at home, but my loving be so low. Daily be thinking about my Caribbean. Oh yeah, yeah, she part of me. It's not alarming me that we still building up this chemistry. So don't you mess with she. I got some angels in my love for this positivity. So don't you get up on my temper. I got some fire inside who and I'm next up. And you don't believe who. Catch me in a few years, who hears your Allah and the man up in the mirror. So let me get a little bit of clearer. Can you see me? Nitizame kwenye kio. Unapendeza ukijistiri na mtandio milio. Ndani nitatizi kocho kwa.
Call my temper, 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 temper. Call my temper, 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 temper. Call my temper, 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 temper. Call my temper, 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 temper.
Girl, you got my feelings, you want my feelings. Reason I don't really wanna stress no more.
You doubt my feelings, broke my heart, so I never really wanna see your face no more.
Cool my temper, out of my pressure. I love what you're feeling, cause I'm feeling vibration. Baby, motivation, that in my amper. So I need a fresh one, I really wanna step up. Baby, like you're feeling me. Baby, on your body, you go dancing me. Shady, who you feel like you're holding me. I don't wanna dance when I'm feeling. If I find love, not anymore. Yeah, I don't wanna fight anymore. Fighting for your love, might wanna start a war. Yeah, I don't wanna fuck anymore. Waste it all my time, but I waste no more. Yeah, I don't wanna fight anymore. Fighting for your love, might wanna make a war. And I'm not falling.
Call my temper, 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 temper. Call my temper, 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 temper. Call my temper, temper, temper.
Thank you very much to Bye-Bye.
Come on, come on, come on.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America in Washington.
Two for five nations.
Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know, by now we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer Justin Thwaite, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, even if you are the tallest man in the world, you can't see tomorrow. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
One plus one equal to two. Two plus two equal to four. Four plus four equal to eight. We gon' be straight. Mziki mtamu paka watu wanarusha ro. Huu ndio mtoko. Watu wamefurahi paka wanacheza na ndoo. Substitute teacher na kupa elimu walafu na kaa kimya. Kuna umeme wa kutosha. Tunamshukuru Mungu. Hatuitaji luku. Hatuishi kwa vurugu. Acha kurudi nyumbani mpweke. Smile kwa sababu we siyo kweke. Angalau maisha yanakupiga mateke. Hakuna mtu wa kudeke. Haya maji ni maji.